The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper,
Senator Mark Warner of Virginia,
Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
A miracle in Wisconsin.
Nearly 3 months after she went missing, 13-year-old Jamie Kloss has been found alive.
And thousands of federal workers struggling to make ends meet.
First off, I can't pay my mortgage.
Later, what's hot in tech on the floor of the Consumer Electronics Show.
I do think that 8K television is a big bet and a big gamble.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with good news. Jamie Kloss, a missing teen whose parents were murdered back in October, was found alive in Wisconsin Thursday. A man has been arrested and charged in her disappearance. Here's Barron County, Wisconsin Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald.
The suspect arrested is Jake Thomas Patterson.
More from correspondent Mark Liverman.
Nearly 3 months after she went missing, 13-year-old Jamie Kloss has been found alive. The Wisconsin teenager was last seen October 14th at a family member's birthday party. Early the next morning, a garbled 911 call was made from her mother's cell phone. When police arrived at the Kloss home about 4 minutes later, they say Jamie was gone and her parents were found dead. Jamie turned up 65 miles north of her barren Wisconsin home. CBS station WCCO spoke to the woman who found her. She says she was just walking her dog when Jamie approached her and said she needed help. According to authorities, a suspect was taken into custody 11 minutes later. Jamie's aunt Sue Allard spoke to WCCO.
Oh my gosh, I just cannot believe this.
Allard says her niece is recovering in the hospital. In the weeks that followed her disappearance, thousands of volunteers canvassed miles of fields, forests, and more in search of the young girl. Jamie's family never gave up hope.
We all love you to the moon and back, and we will never stop looking for you.
Barron County Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald wrote on Facebook, "We promise to bring Jamie home. We get to fulfill that promise." Mark Liverman, CBS News.
Back here in Washington, no signs a partial government shutdown will end as the president, fresh off a visit to the southern border, continues to mull declaring a national emergency to get money to build a wall there.
I have the absolute right to declare a national emergency. The lawyers have so advised me. I'm not prepared to do that yet, but if I have to, I will.
Here's correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House.
Sources confirm the White House has asked the Pentagon, and specifically the Army Corps of Engineers, to look at unspent funds that could be redirected to build the wall if the president declares a national emergency. One particular pot of money now being eyed is some $13.9 billion that Congress approved last year for the Army Corps to repair hurricane damage in Texas and Puerto Rico. Those projects would be scrapped and the money moved to the wall.
More from correspondent Major Garrett.
Presidents have declared national emergencies nearly 60 times since 1976. President Bush invoked one after 9/11, and President Obama declared an emergency in response to a flu outbreak. Mr. Trump would use the declaration to free up billions in unallocated military construction money. But such a move would almost certainly draw a legal challenge, and some Senate Republicans cautioned Mr. Trump not to sidestep Congress.
I don't want to see a declaration of national emergency. I think that's an action that would be taken in the most extreme circumstances.
The president also backtracked on his famous campaign pledge that Mexico would pay for the wall.
And I never meant they're going to write out a check. I said they're going to pay for it. They are. They are paying for it with the incredible deal we made.
During the campaign, Mr. Trump said he would tax money sent back to Mexico. His campaign website also said Mexico could pay through, quote, a one-time payment of $5 to $10 billion.
There was also rhetoric like this.
So a lot of politicians said, you can't get Mexico to pay for the wall. I said, oh, it's going to be so easy.
The idea of declaring a national emergency is being given serious White House consideration. It has a ways to go, but it's also a pressure point on Congress, with the White House essentially saying, negotiate with the president or risk seeing him get the border wall funding and you be left out of the equation. The president also announcing he was canceling a trip to the January 22nd World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, suggests he's preparing for a long partial government shutdown ahead. Major Garrett, CBS News, Hidalgo, Texas.
After passing a bill Wednesday to reopen the Treasury Department to get the IRS to begin processing tax returns, the House passed three more bills Thursday to reopen other parts of the federal government. But CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff reports from Capitol Hill the bills are DOA in the Senate.
The House passed one bill that would fund the Departments of Transportation and Housing and Urban Development and a second measure that would fund FDA, agriculture, and related agencies. On the transportation vote, 12 Republicans crossed party lines to vote with Democrats. So what's next? Senator Lindsey Graham isn't sure.
I have never been more depressed about moving forward than right now. I just don't see a pathway forward. Somebody's got to, like, get some energy to fix this.
Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
On Friday, many of the 800,000 federal workers affected by the shutdown didn't get the paycheck they expected. Many of those federal workers, TSA employees, the agency says resignations and sick outs are on the rise. Now, Miami International Airport says it's partially closing a terminal this weekend due to a shortage of TSA screeners, and unpaid members of the Coast Guard were told to have garage sales. Correspondent Anna Werner met one couple with their livelihoods on the line.
First off, I can't pay my mortgage.
This is what frustration looks like for federal corrections officer John Siciliano.
This is not like I did this on purpose, you know what I mean?
He's making a stream of nonstop phone calls to try to hold the banks at bay. He hasn't gotten a paycheck since December 29th and doesn't expect to get one any day soon.
I'm still working. I'm going to work every day, and I'm not getting paid. I have to work extra hours and not get paid.
Siciliano has been guarding prisoners at Philadelphia's Federal Detention Center for nearly 19 years and lived through several shutdowns. But this one has gone on so long, he's about to miss a mortgage payment. The bank has told him and his wife if they miss a second one, it'll start foreclosure proceedings.
Are you scared or angry?
A little bit of both. A little bit of scared because we've never missed any payments, and I'm angry at the bank because there's no give.
His wife Vicky's preschool teaching job can't cover their expenses.
To secure the border.
Nothing's getting done. None.
She blames President Trump. He blames both Democrats and Republicans.
Because this is ridiculous, and this is going to go on for months.
Both want to know if they can be disciplined with their finances, why can't the government?
And it's almost like children, Republicans and Democrats, two children fighting against each other, tit for tat.
You don't see that much difference?
No, because you got a million people out of work and, you know, it's like pawns in a game.
Between their house and car payments, the couple says they owe about $3,000. The amount of money right now in their bank account is $2,100. Anna Werner, CBS News, New York.
Coming up, the latest in the Russia probe.
The special counsel has evidence Manafort shared polling data with an associate linked to Russian intelligence.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The U.S. is trying to play defense for its allied forces in Syria as it withdraws from the country, and Turkey ramps up its efforts to fight what's left of ISIS. Correspondent Holly Williams in Istanbul explains what's at stake.
John Bolton was in Turkey looking for an assurance that when the U.S. pulls its roughly 2,000 troops out of neighboring Syria, the Turkish will not attack America's Syrian allies on the ground.
John Bolton.
Instead, an angry Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, accused Bolton of making a, quote, serious mistake after mixed messages on the U.S. withdrawal plan. America's partners in Syria are a local militia group, still doing battle against ISIS holdouts. But Turkey views them as a terrorist organization and says it's drawn up plans to attack them.
Now we've won.
Less than a month after President Trump announced that American troops in Syria would be coming home, there's now confusion over exactly when they'll withdraw, leaving U.S. allies unsettled here in the Middle East. Meanwhile, America's partners in the fight against ISIS, known as the Syrian Democratic Forces, also feel betrayed. They've called the US withdrawal a stab in the back and fear an onslaught from Turkey. A ragtag army of farmers, students, and shopkeepers. In 2017, a US commander told us just how crucial their role was.
Our Syrian partners here are doing the world's bidding, the world's fight. They're doing what no one else is willing or capable to do.
The US undoubtedly faces difficult choices when it comes to its military presence in Syria. But with the confusion surrounding this withdrawal plan, the Trump administration seems to have angered all sides. Holly Williams, CBS News, Istanbul, Turkey.
Bad news for an American being held in Russia on suspicion of spying for the United States. Reporter Alec Loon has more.
There's no prisoner swap in the works for American Paul Whelan, who was arrested in Moscow on spying charges. Besides foreign agent Maria Butina, several other high-profile Russians have been locked up in the United States, including the hacker son of a member of parliament. But the Russian foreign ministry says suggestions of an exchange are fake news.
Iran suspected of holding another American prisoner since July, according to the family of the U.S. Navy vet.
Michael White, the 46-year-old U.S. Navy veteran from California, was traveling to Iran to see his girlfriend, according to his mother, Joanne White, who found out about his arrest just 3 weeks ago. White had visited the country previously 3 or 4 times without issue. His mother said she is concerned for her son, who suffers from asthma and is a cancer survivor. White is one of at least 4 American prisoners held in Iran, including Princeton student Shiyu Wang, as well as 82-year-old Bakr Namazi, a former UN diplomat, and his son, businessman Siamak Namazi. Kareem Sajapour of the Carnegie Institute is a friend of the Namazi family.
In order to release American citizens from Iranian prisons, it requires both a large financial package from the United States and the release of Iranian prisoners held in the United States.
President Trump has repeatedly criticized his predecessor for greenlighting a prisoner swap and unfreezing more than $1 billion in Iranian assets. That brought 4 Americans home in 2016.
I didn't do what Obama did, give him $1.8 billion in cash to get back 4 hostages.
But President Trump's confrontational stance, exiting the nuclear deal and sanctioning Iran, has not stopped the regime from detaining more Americans.
Has the Trump administration policy made it harder for them to bring Americans home?
There's essentially no diplomatic context between the United States and Iran, high-level sustained contacts. And it is going to take some type of a quid pro quo for Iran to release these prisoners.
Before the U.S. exited the nuclear deal last year, Iran refused U.S. requests to set up diplomatic talks about prisoners. Recent overtures by Iran have gone unanswered. The Trump administration issued a public call on Tuesday for Iran to release innocent American detainees. Margaret Brennan, CBS News, Washington.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is keeping an eye on North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He made a surprise 3-day visit to China, meeting with President Xi Jinping, and left with China's backing for a possible second summit with President Trump, according to Chinese state media.
Korean television showed North Korean leader Kim Jong-un arriving by train in Beijing on what's believed to be his 35th birthday. Chinese President Xi Jinping invited the ally ahead of a possible U.S.-North Korea summit. This foreign ministry spokesman says China and North Korea are friendly neighbors and says the visit is part of their tradition of friendship. But many analysts see this trip as a strategy meeting between the two nations before Kim faces President Trump again. The pair met in a historic summit last year and agreed to work toward peace and denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula. There have been few signs of progress. This professor says North Korea knows the U.S. has the power to change its mind and threaten the security of its regime. China is the only country that can settle those worries. This is Kim Jong-un's 4th visit to China in the past year. Gwen Baumgardner, CBS News, London.
Federal authorities believe Paul Manafort shared 2016 presidential polling data with an ex-Russian agent. More from CBS News correspondent Paula Reed at the Justice Department.
Lawyers for Paul Manafort accidentally revealed in a court filing that the special counsel has evidence Manafort shared polling data with an associate linked to Russian intelligence during the 2016 campaign.
As special counsel Robert Mueller continues to probe Russian interference in the election, it's the first time a Trump official has been accused of sharing campaign information with Russian interests. The associate is Konstantin Kalimnik, who worked closely with Manafort for years promoting Russian-backed Ukrainian interests. The filings also reveal Manafort may have discussed a Ukraine peace plan with Kalimnik on more than one occasion. Investigators have been questioning witnesses about whether Russia tried to influence the Trump campaign to broker a resolution to hostilities between Russia and Ukraine. The new details were revealed in a defense filing that was supposed to be redacted, but through a cut-and-paste error could be read. Manafort was convicted on charges of tax and bank fraud last year. Traitor. The special counsel has accused him of violating a subsequent plea deal to cooperate in the investigation. President Trump continues to deny that there was any coordination between his campaign and Russia.
Because there was no collusion.
Manafort's contacts are exactly the kind of new information that we expect to be included in Mueller's final report. The president could try to prevent portions of the report from becoming public, but congressional Democrats have vowed that it will be released, even if they have to subpoena Robert Mueller. Paula Reed, CBS News, the Justice Department.
We also learned on Thursday that President Trump's former attorney Michael Cohen will testify to Congress next month. Cohen is due to serve prison time for crimes that included arranging hush money paid to women who claimed they had affairs with Mr. Trump. Up next, what's next for the sexual assault case against Kevin Spacey?
The judge ordered him not to have contact with his accuser.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The vice presidency is a mostly symbolic job. However, if we came to a different understanding, I can handle the more mundane jobs, overseeing bureaucracy, military, energy, and foreign policy.
Yeah, right. I like that.
That's a clip from the new movie Vice about Vice President Dick Cheney. Christian Bale plays an uncanny Cheney in that movie, for which he won a Golden Globe last weekend.
Thank you to Satan for giving me inspiration on how to play this role.
Author Charles Denyer is working with Cheney on a biography about him. Charles, first, what do you think about the film and Christian Bale's portrayal of him?
Well, from an actor perspective, look, Christian Bale is, there's a reason why he was chosen. He's obviously very talented. I think the film, though, missed the mark on a number of issues in regards to accuracy. And I think there are some pretty low scenes, almost despicable. The scene where, in the movie, Lynn Cheney's father is somewhat accused of possibly having something to do with the death of her mother. That's just despicable. That's completely false. So some of these things were pulled out of from where, I don't know. I'm not too sure why they're in there.
What is the legacy, then, Charles, of Dick Cheney in this country, then?
The legacy is he's without question the most powerful vice president in the history of this country, and for a number of reasons. A perfect storm came together where he used his immense national security credentials to help fight the war on terror. Now, whether you agree or disagree with those principles, that's not really the case here when I'm trying to talk about his legacy. I'm talking about it in terms of influence and power. He was a man that had been in Washington for many decades. He truly understood the levers of power. I think Cheney was immensely influential in many policy directives, particularly on the war on terror. But that's what Bush brought him on board for.
Charles Denyer on the Weekend Roundup, his latest book now out, Our Nation's Number Two, The Rising Influence of America's Modern Vice Presidency. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
A pretrial hearing in the sexual assault case against actor Kevin Spacey is set for March 4th in Nantucket. More from CBS News correspondent Kenneth Craig.
We're all right.
Two-time Oscar winner Kevin Spacey appeared in court on Nantucket Monday, where the judge ordered him not to have contact with his accuser.
You're required to stay away and have no contact, direct or indirect, with the alleged victim. All right.
The actor is charged with indecent assault and battery for allegedly groping an 18-year-old busboy in the bar area of the Club Car restaurant in 2016. His lawyers entered a not guilty plea on his behalf. The accuser is the son of former Boston television news anchor Heather Unruh.
Spacey stuck his hand inside my son's pants and grabbed his genitals. This was completely unexpected.
According to the criminal complaint, Unruh's son told Spacey he was a 23-year-old college student. The two exchanged cell phone numbers, and Spacey bought the accuser 8 to 10 drinks in about 70 minutes. The accuser claims Spacey groped him for about 3 minutes and that he captured part of the assault on a brief Snapchat video. During the hearing, the judge granted the defense's motion to preserve data on the accuser's cell phone for 6 months following the alleged incident. Spacey's attorneys believe there could be evidence on there that could help clear their client. Spacey tried to get out of attending this arraignment, saying his presence would add to the negative publicity, but the judge turned down his request. The judge did, however, say Spacey could skip the next hearing in March. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, Nantucket, Massachusetts.
New scrutiny of R. Kelly's treatment of women following a six-part Lifetime Network docuseries called Surviving R. Kelly. Here's correspondent Jerika Duncan. So baby, give me
that. Kelly, a 52-year-old three-time Grammy winner, has been haunted by sexual misconduct allegations for years. He was acquitted of child pornography charges in 2008. Gerald Griggs, a Savage's attorney, thinks it's only a matter of time before Kelly is charged again.
I think it's highly likely that Mr. Kelly will be prosecuted. False imprisonment, kidnapping, domestic abuse, just to name a few.
Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
Now to Phoenix, where police are investigating a woman who was raped in a coma at a care facility.
And the mom is doing okay?
We're not sure. We had no idea this patient was pregnant.
That's the 911 call made by staff at that facility after she gave birth to a baby last month. Here's CBS News correspondent Omar Villafranca.
I am hopeful and confident that we will find who committed this crime.
Arizona investigators are hunting for any DNA evidence, using court-ordered cheek swabs to pinpoint who raped a female patient at Hacienda Healthcare.
Right now you're focusing on employees at Hacienda Healthcare.
Right now we still have a very wide scope. We're looking at anyone who possibly might have had contact with this individual.
Police say they first reported to Hacienda on December 29th following a call of an infant in distress. Both the woman and the baby were rushed to the hospital.
I am led to believe that the first time that anyone knew that a baby was being, that this woman was pregnant, was when she was actually giving birth to the baby.
On Monday, Hacienda's CEO Bill Timmons resigned. In a statement, Hacienda's executive vice president says the organization will accept nothing less than a full accounting of this absolutely horrifying situation.
People with disabilities of all types are actually preyed upon because of their disability at times, because they know they can't fight back, because they know that they can't report.
Erica McFadden leads the Arizona Council that advocates for people with developmental disabilities. She wants healthcare workers better trained to identify sexual abuse and assault.
We don't even know if individuals are given any kind of training to know if they know how to report abuse. So if something happens to them, we don't know if they even know where to go.
The 29-year-old woman was a member of the San Carlos Apache tribe, and Phoenix police tell us her and the child are recovering in a local hospital. The family tells us that it was a baby boy that was born into a very loving family, and they do plan to care for it. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Phoenix.
Florida's clemency board has pardoned four black men who were convicted of raping a white woman 70 years ago in a case that was fueled by racism in a rural Florida county.
I'm Peter King. The Groveland Four had been convicted on evidence that was dubious at best. Charles Greenlee's son, Thomas.
He was not even there. He had nothing to do with it.
But speaking about it for the first time out of the courtroom, 87-year-old Norma Patchett Upshaw says the men did rape her.
Yeah, well, I just don't know.
what kind of horror I've been through for all these many years.
A mob murdered one of the four. Law enforcement withheld evidence that could have exonerated the other three. Governor Ron DeSantis says the ideals of justice,
they were perverted time and time again.
Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, what's new at the big Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas?
Well, I think some of the big bets are voice activation, that everything will be controlled by voice today.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A blast of winter weather across parts of the U.S. this weekend as dropping temperatures and snow freeze parts of Europe. Reporter Anna Nura Skywitz is in Berlin.
Four skiers are presumed dead after being caught in an avalanche in Norway. And in Romania, a 67-year-old man was found frozen in his parked car after temperatures reached a low of minus 11 Fahrenheit. And the snowstorms have also caused traffic delays across the continent. So flights from Netherlands and Slovakia were canceled.
Britain's prime minister facing an uphill battle to get her Brexit deal past British lawmakers as the clock runs down. CBS News correspondent Vicky Barker reports from London.
Another day, another defeat for Theresa May.
The eyes to the right, 308. The nose to the left, 297.
The prime minister now bound by a new measure to come up with a plan B if, as expected, her Brexit deal is defeated. This all has turned into a custody battle between the British government and British lawmakers who want more say in how Britain leaves the EU. But the EU's made it clear there is no alternative to its Brexit deal and there's no parliamentary majority for any of the Brexit scenarios. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
A key British luxury car brand is signaling a change in direction. More from CBS's Larry Miller.
Jaguar Land Rover, Britain's biggest car maker, is cutting 4,500 jobs, about 10% of its UK workforce, after recording a massive third-quarter loss. Auto analyst Jim Holder says Jaguar is looking for ways to get out of its financial hole.
It's already signaled that it's going to invest more in electrification.
A slump in demand for diesel cars, poor sales in China, and uncertainty over Brexit are among the key reasons for Jaguar's sudden slump. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
One way for parents to keep better tabs on their kids.
British teenager Ben Herbert was never in a rush to text his dad back. Now, he has no choice. That alarm is part of an app his dad created after Ben ignored him too many times.
He may prioritize his friends' messages over mine sometimes.
The Reply ASAP app makes missing a message impossible, taking over the screen and sounding an alarm until the user responds. You can hit snooze, but the alert will just keep coming back.
It could be annoying, but on the flip side, it's important.
Nick Herbert launched the Android app 18 months ago and says more than 100,000 people have downloaded it.
That's great. That's great. I wish they had had it, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't normally reply to people a lot on time, so if it is like something that would like force me into it, it'd be good.
Herbert acknowledges some people may find the technology intrusive, but says it has actually improved his relationship with his son.
From a safety perspective, if I send him a message, it will tell me where he is at the time that the message arrives on his phone.
Each user needs to download the app for it to work. Ben says he doesn't mind the check-ins. He keeps tabs on his dad, too.
I have used it on him for, some important situations.
Ben's dad says he doesn't bombard his son with lots of texts, only urgent ones.
I was out with my mates at a football match, and I was out later than I was meant to be.
This father and son never dreamed their experience would better connect so many other families. Terry Okita, CBS News, London.
The world's biggest names in tech gathered in Vegas for CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, and so did one of the biggest names at CBS, Larry Magid. Hi, Larry.
Hi, nice to be here. And in this case, what goes on in Vegas will not stay in Vegas.
Well, Larry, what's caught your eye so far?
Well, there's the usual things, all the big screen TVs, a 98-inch 8K television, as if anybody needs 8K. That, by the way, is four times the resolution of 4K. Don't ask me how they do the math, but that's what it is. And so you're seeing a lot of that, and then foldable TV screens or rollable screens that roll up like a projector and foldable smartphone screens. So that's all here, but I spent a lot of time looking at cars and looking at health-related technologies. I looked at, for example, a glucose monitor that you can wear and you don't have to stick your finger to get a glucose reading. I looked at a device that you can wear that they say reduces stress, although having tested it on the floor of CES, I can't tell you for sure that TouchPoint really did much for my stress, but maybe it was lower than it would have been otherwise. I looked at a blood pressure monitor from Omron that's part of a smartwatch. So it looks like a regular smartwatch, but it has a cuff on it, a blood pressure cuff on it, and you can measure your blood pressure as you go about your day without having to take your watch off.
What are some of the big bets you think technology companies are making a play for in 2019?
Well, I think some of the big bets are voice activation, that everything will be controlled by voice today, obviously using artificial intelligence to make the decisions. I do think that 8K televisions is a big bet and a big gamble. I was here at many a CES where they were showing off 3D TV, and the industry loved it, but consumers didn't, and they wound up dropping it as a product. So we'll have to see whether 8K catches on. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. And, of course, the whole autonomous vehicle craze is probably a good bet, but a big bet. The auto companies and all the peripheral companies that work in the automotive industry are spending billions getting us to the point where we don't have to drive our cars. And I just came back from a meeting with Ford and also other companies that are showing off, Google among them, showing off self-driving cars.
Self-driving cars still have a long way to go, and these 8K TVs are great, but I don't think there's any TV shows in 8K yet. So when we see these new technologies, how many roadblocks do they still have to getting it into your living room and you finding it useful?
Well, there are roadblocks. In the case of the autonomous cars, there's a regulatory roadblock along with the technology roadblock and the reality that they're going to have to share the road with driver cars, and that's going to be a tough haul. When it comes to TVs, first of all, price. I mean, some of these TVs literally cost tens of thousands of dollars. An 85-inch 8K TV from Samsung is $15,000. I don't plan to buy one anytime soon. But on the other hand, I remember being here a few years ago and looking at 4K TVs that were $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, and I recently bought one for $400. So it's all a matter of getting production up to scale and getting prices down to where consumers can afford it.
What about some of the other things that you've noticed there, especially when it comes to digital assistants, perhaps?
Well, I've noticed that Google Assistant and Alexa, Amazon Alexa, are in just about anything. I'm talking about ovens. I'm talking about alarm clocks. I'm talking about cars. Just about anything you could imagine that you would normally control by pushing buttons or swiping on a screen, you can now control with your voice. So they're becoming a huge part of all aspects of the industry. And of course, Google, Amazon, and to a lesser extent, Apple are driving that. But a lot of companies are picking up on it.
And that, of course, means more people will need more internet.
More people will need more internet. More people will need more electricity. And more people need to trust that these devices not only are going to work, but to protect their privacy. So there's a lot of trust involved in adopting to that. I'm one of the people who lives on the bleeding edge, and I've got either an Echo or a Google Assistant in practically every room in my house, but I'm not immune to the possibility that maybe my privacy isn't as good as I'd like it to be.
More ways to possibly listen in to you. CBS News technology contributor Larry Magid on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, the divorce for the ages.
The world's newest, most eligible bachelor is a multi-billionaire.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Jim Bridenstine, administrator of NASA. How close are we to space tourism?
I think we're very close.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A bizarre surprise inside a North Carolina home.
Police in the college town of Davidson, North Carolina, north of Charlotte, say two men somehow found a key and got into a $2 million house that once belonged to the town's mayor. They unloaded personal items from a truck and moved in a week ago. Police say the two claim allegiance to what's called the Moorish Nation. Its followers say they are immune from many federal and state laws. The two alleged squatters were arrested without incident and are both free on bond. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Greensboro, North Carolina.
Another study takes a look at people who are heavy users of social media.
Michigan State researchers administered a psychological test to people who were consumed by their use of Facebook and other social media and found they had questionable decision-making ability. Dar Meshi is the lead author of the study.
Excessive social media users behave very similar to drug addicts in their inability to make good decisions under risk.
And he says there are implications beyond online activity.
If someone is an excessive social media user, then they might be making mistakes with their decision making in the real world.
Pam Coulter, CBS News.
New concerns about high driving.
At the most advanced driving simulator in the world, at the University of Iowa, the study of the effects of driving under the influence of cannabis has been in high gear.
It looks like a spaceship.
And designed to pick up the effects of cannabis.
Dr. Marilyn Westis has been studying cannabis for 20 years. She put me in the driver's seat when we visited the lab for 60 minutes.
The ability to take information in, evaluate it, make decisions, and initiate them, greatly affected by cannabis.
You have marijuana in the car?
Those potential dangers are at the heart of a study out which found more than half of Michigan residents surveyed who use medical cannabis for chronic pain admitted to driving while a little high. One in five admitted to driving while very high. That's a concern for law enforcement. There are 2.1 million medical marijuana users across 33 states. Right now, there is no reliable roadside test to know for sure if a driver is impaired by cannabis. Neurologist Dr. Oren Davinsky of NYU Langone Health conducted the trials that led to the first FDA-approved cannabis medication, a drug for epilepsy.
Has the use of medical marijuana and the legislation of it gotten ahead of the science?
Absolutely. Essentially, politicians have voted that this should be a legal medical therapy, and we don't have data from rigorous scientific studies to define what the safety is.
It's significant that Dr. Davinsky, a pioneer in medical cannabis use, is concerned. He says we need more specific advice on how to use it in as safe a way as possible, and that includes being able to tell patients how long to wait before driving and figuring out ways of reliably determining what role it may be playing in motor vehicle accidents. Dr. John LaPook, CBS News, New York.
On Tuesday, facing liquidation, a bankrupt Sears agreed to consider a revised takeover bid from billionaire chairman Edward Lampert. The 126-year-old department store, now a shell of its former self, a king of U.S. retail. Reports correspondent Tony DeCopel.
Sears for America Shop.
It was the original everything retailer, delivering the world to your doorstep.
Why do I shop at Sears? It's easy for me. I can pick up tennis balls, children's clothing, torque wrenches.
But after navigating the shift to department stores and malls, Sears stopped innovating, according to former Sears executive Mark Cohen, now director of the Retail Studies Program at Columbia Business School.
The company has been on a death spiral for well over a decade.
It's not the only company that has failed to change with the times. From 2012 through 2017, U.S. e-commerce sales nearly doubled. And in the last 2 years, at least 200 million square feet of retail space closed, including dozens of stores from JCPenney, Macy's, Toys R Us, and Kmart, which merged with Sears in 2005.
This table and chairs and the china cabinet came from Sears.
Bobby Jones told CBS Sunday Morning he worked at Sears for 35 years, enjoying wages and benefits that many of today's retail workers can only dream of.
It was prestige to say, yes, I work for Sears.
While the decline of Sears may be historic, says CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson, it does not mean the death of retail.
You have lots of retailers that are thriving out there, and you have some, like Amazon, that are building brick-and-mortar stores like Whole Foods, which they acquired.
But should any of today's retail giants fail to adapt, Hobson says they, too, risk falling.
You have to be able to play in lots of lanes, online, with brick-and-mortar. You have to have good products that the customer wants and stay competitive.
Tony DeCopel reporting. The world's richest couple splits up.
The world's newest, most eligible bachelor is a multi-billionaire. Amazon's Jeff Bezos and his wife, Mackenzie, have issued a statement announcing that after 25 years, they're getting divorced. They say they feel incredibly lucky to have found each other, and they're deeply grateful for every one of the years they were married. They say they'd do it all over again and both see wonderful futures ahead as parents, friends, partners in ventures and adventures. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
An unstoppable man on a mission.
Try as he might, Charlie Bliss just can't stop working. Workaholics aren't that unusual, but this one is 101 years old.
How many times would you say you've retired over the years?
I lost count.
Last June, the chemical engineer became what's believed to be the oldest American ever awarded a patent for a system he says could be a big step in saving the world from climate change.
The idea is to keep carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
And you think you've found a way to...
A cost-effective way to do it.
His elaborate plan is designed to capture carbon dioxide emissions from power plants that burn fossil fuels like coal and oil, preventing them from entering the atmosphere where they are a major cause of global warming.
And we have quite a bit to talk about now.
Bliss and business partner Charles Mosley, who's a mere 81, are known as the thermodynamics duo.
He makes me feel like a youngster.
They even have a startup company to market their idea, and they're working on 6 more patents.
I think the real secret is to keep busy up here.
And you're going to continue doing this work for a while.
I have a work program right now that can keep me busy for 2 years.
When he'll be 103 and still working to save the world. Chip Reed, CBS News, Springfield, Virginia.
Finally this weekend, a big payout for a penny pincher.
And they say a penny isn't worth anything anymore. How about one worth a couple of $100,000?
Pennies from heaven.
It's a rare 1943 penny, one of only 15 minted in bronze.
From heaven.
Selling at a Florida auction for $200,000. A teenager found the penny in his pocket in 1947, and he kept it all his life. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.